You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Harry Philbrick. Harry, thanks so much for being with me today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Harry, let's talk a little bit about your work and relationship to the Philadelphia Contemporary. Can you tell me what you're involved in now and your role?
Sure. I left my position as director of the museum at the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts just about 2 years ago to launch a new nonprofit called Philadelphia Contemporary. And we are currently doing pop-up exhibitions and performances and various projects around the city of Philadelphia. And our long-term goal is to build a building, create a permanent home for Philadelphia Contemporary. The goal is for us to become a non-collecting, multidisciplinary contemporary art space with a real emphasis on collaboration and partnership as a kind of ongoing model for how both our curatorial program will run and in some senses how our business model will be run.
So it's such a fascinating model and venture, and you come from this history of working with museums, of being directors from the Aldrich Contemporary Art Museum to, as you were saying, the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts. How did this begin? This seems like a very contemporary direction. It's a direction I relate to and understand. But coming from those two positions, you created something or began something that was a very new kind of venture, very creative, very contemporary, that seems like a big switch for someone like you. What initiated that?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that. And it's interesting, the germ for this idea really, or the seed for this idea, was really planted back when I was at the Aldrich. And in 2004, we opened a new building. And right before the building opened, and you have to remember this, the building was really my baby. I had sort of pushed for it to be built and led the capital campaign and the design plan and so on and so forth. But shortly before it opened, I was looking at the building and thinking to myself, we've built a really great 20th century museum, and we're in the 21st century. What is a 21st century art museum? And I don't mean that the building wasn't green enough. It was more that the model for the Aldrich was rooted in the 1960s. It opened in the 1960s, and that was a time when a number of similar institutions were opening across the country and across Europe as well, even in Asia a little bit. And the idea was the Kunsthalle model, so a non-collecting museum focusing on changing exhibitions of contemporary art. And it's a great model. It's a wonderful model, but so many other industries had undergone really fundamental shifts in how they delivered their product, if you will, that it got me thinking about how should that apply to contemporary art museums. And the notion that I began exploring while I was at the Aldrich was this idea of partnerships and trying to create long-term sustainable partnerships that would allow the institution to have a broader reach, and both curatorially and also in terms of its audiences. So while I was at the Aldrich, we started to explore the idea of a partnership with the Hall Art Foundation, which is a significant foundation collecting contemporary art, which at the time was based in Connecticut. And we were exploring the idea of a partnership with the Hall Art Foundation and the Aldrich to build a new building in Bridgeport, Connecticut, that would be half the Hall Foundation curating from their collection and half the Aldrich doing its exhibitions of contemporary art. So it was a partnership that would have gotten the Aldrich another venue in a much different community. Bridgeport and Ridgefield are only maybe 20 miles away, but in many ways they're half a world away from each other. Would have given the Aldrich access to public transportation. The site that we were looking at, which the city of Bridgeport had offered to give to us, was a few blocks from the Amtrak and Metro North station, and obviously we were right off of Route 95. So it was a partnership that I really felt would have benefited the Aldrich and allowed it to explore a new model. That ended up not happening, and it was really the reason I moved on from the Aldrich. And in coming to Philadelphia, I quickly fell in love with Philadelphia as a city. And as I settled into the city over the first couple of years, I realized I wanted to explore this idea. I realized I wanted to explore this idea, and particularly in Philadelphia, for a couple of reasons. One is that Philadelphia is the only major American city that doesn't have a substantial independent contemporary art museum. We have the ICA, which is a fantastic institution, but it is rooted in its academic home at the University of Pennsylvania. So I saw that there was a kind of gap in the cultural ecosystem here, and I also thought that Philadelphia was unique among the cities that I've experienced in terms of being open to a collaborative model. The cultural ecosystem here is big, but it is also unusually collegial. There's a lot of camaraderie and good intersection between the cultural organizations in town. So I thought that trying this model was something that would really fit in Philadelphia.
And let's talk about the first project that you did there. I don't know if that's the Quiet Circus or something else. What was the first event or project that you planned, and how did that come to be?
So when we started, we were a tiny staff. It was me and one part-time curatorial assistant. And our very first project was a partnership with Headlong Dance, which is an incredibly interesting and innovative dance company here in Philadelphia. Company is the wrong word to describe them. But David Brick, who is the principal, one of the principals at Headlong Dance, was working on a project called The Quiet Circus, which was a year-and-a-half-long residency by Headlong on a pier on the Delaware River. And they did performances that the public were invited to join in and participate in every weekend during the course of the fall, then the spring, and then the following fall. So Philadelphia Contemporary partnered both as a thought partner in constructing that project, but also we wanted to create four ancillary events around the Quiet Circus that we called River Charrettes. And they were four events that happened at four different riverfront locations across Philadelphia, two on the Delaware River, two on the Schuylkill River, and really kind of picked up on the themes within the Quiet Circus of the engagement with that transitory landscape between the city and the river, between the history of the river and the current day real estate pressures and development pressures, between the little bit of wild environment and the built environment, and also the ideas of motion and stasis and reflection that were in the Quiet Circus. So the first of those River Charrettes was at Bartram's Garden on the Schuylkill River. Bartram's Garden is an incredible place. It's a basically an 18th century homestead that remains intact today. And John Bartram was a botanist who was gathering species here in the New World and bringing them back to Europe, and vice versa, bringing things over from Europe to here. And so his home and gardens and meadows are there and intact and completely surrounded by decayed industrial infrastructure, railroad tracks. There's an oil refinery immediately across the river, and some residential, quite impoverished residential areas. So what we did in that environment was a performance with Eiko Otake, and Eiko is one of the two performers in Eiko and Koma, but she was performing on her own. And the audience gathered by the riverfront, and Eiko led the audience, as only she can, very slowly through the woods to the river and then up into this little meadow. And in the meadow was a large table, and we gathered around the table in this quite bucolic spot looking out at the oil refinery across the river. And there was a conversation that I moderated between Eiko and Alan Greenberger, who was the deputy mayor for planning in Philadelphia and the person who was responsible for creating the Schuylkill River Trail that was opening up the waterfront of the Schuylkill to pedestrians and runners and the public. And the conversation was about the frail human body, the vulnerable human body, in relationship to the built environment. So Eco and Alan kind of represented those two elements. And it was a wonderful conversation and a wonderful event. Pretty complicated to explain, as you can hear. But for the 25 people that were there, it was a really magical launch to Philadelphia Contemporary.
And that's so exciting. And the way you brought that together, and you can almost imagine that kind of walk, I would think, for the participants, that would have been very exciting and new, and a great way to also partner with a so-called company.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the walk, because all four of the River Charettes really centered around the idea of a communal walk. And that's something that is very much a part of David's practice. But it was a really wonderful way for us to begin, because it embodied a lot of the values that are important to me in this venture. The idea of different people coming together to share a common experience, of really being rooted in a place. You know, we're at these four different waterfront sites, but really rooted in Philadelphia. And crossing genres, in the sense that there were performers, in some cases dancers, in some cases singers, who were leading people on the walks, but really the walks were about the sensory experience of being in these particular environments and kind of slowing down and becoming aware of them. So that, to me, gets to the essence of art and what's important about art. Is seeing the world anew and finding either intellectual and or spiritual solace and intrigue, if you will, in that process.
Well, and slowing down certainly is, I think, an aspect too that's part of the art world, right? To
yes.
To stop and look and
very
and,
much
and
so.
Think and feel. So that's a very exciting first project to talk about. Now, I know you've done others. Is there roughly plans for the future? I know you've done readings and events.
Well, we have a number of quite large-scale projects in the pipeline at the moment, and they also reflect the fact that we've been able to expand our curatorial staff in a way that I'm very excited about, and in a way that was very deliberate. I really wanted to make sure that as we create this institution, that it not fall into the trap of being such a heavily founder-driven institution that it really reflected the founder, which would be me, too much. So we were able, through a wonderful set of circumstances, to hire Nato Thompson from Creative Time as our artistic director. So Nato is really taking on that role of senior curator. And he joined us close to 6 months ago now, I guess, and is really beginning to make his mark in terms of what we're doing in the future and thinking about our programming. We also, last spring, did a poetry project in Philadelphia's 30th Street Station, and we worked with Yolanda Wisher, who at the time was the Poet Laureate of Philadelphia. And Yolanda's an amazing human being and a very talented poet and a very talented performer, spoken word and music. And the program that she put together over the course of 2 weeks at 30th Street Station just blew me away. And in particular, I was struck by the audience that came to this series of spoken word events. It was the audience that every art museum says they want. It was an incredibly diverse audience, and I mean that in every sense of the word diverse, in terms of race, in terms of gender and orientation and age, and from what one could gather, socioeconomic status. I mean, it was a real reflection of the breadth of the city. And it took me a while to really process that and understand that, you know, there are so many barriers to entry in the contemporary art world. Some of them we impose ourselves through the language we use or the architecture that we build. And some of them are just socioeconomic, that if you want to be an artist, it takes money. You need training. You need a studio. You need equipment. But spoken word is much more accessible. One can be a poet or a spoken word artist, and you need only your mouth, and perhaps paper and pencil at the minimum. So it really is accessible to all. So there's a more diverse group of practitioners, and therefore there's a much more diverse audience. So we made the decision. Yeah, it really was a powerful realization. So we made the decision to create the position of curator of spoken word and to tie that into our curatorial programming right from the beginning. And we got a grant from a foundation here in Philadelphia, and we're able to hire Yolanda in that role. So we will be doing a series of spoken word and poetry events before we have a building, and we also want to integrate that curatorial practice into our full curatorial program once we have a building.
That's very exciting. So a question a little bit about, since you mentioned a little bit about money and Nato Thompson, mm-hmm. wonderful curator who I've interviewed before when he was working at Creative Time, and of course they did wonderful projects there. Let's talk a little bit about fundraising for this, mm-hmm. if we can. You talked about your grant that you just got. You want to build a building, and I know for Aldrich you were saying you were in charge of the capital fund there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot to do, and in this a lot to raise, money to raise, and that you started with a staff and you're building a staff. I'm curious to ask a little bit about, since you're now, I mean, maybe there's connections you're bringing from all these other places, or is it, do you begin all over again to raise money for something like this, for a salary for someone like Nato, for yourself, for the small staff, and then for the building? How do you approach that one day at a time? Because it seems like a lot, but you've obviously been successful at that.
I think in terms of a fundraising approach for Philadelphia Contemporary, I've certainly learned a lot over the years from working at various other institutions and spent a long time kind of mapping out a plan for how to approach this. I was lucky enough to have some individuals here in Philadelphia who were excited about the vision for Philadelphia Contemporary and were supportive in the, sort of giving me seed capital to get started. And that circle of individual funders, almost all Philadelphia-based, has grown. It's still not a huge group, but it's grown. And over the last year, we've also been able to work with some foundations, in both cases, in all cases, Philadelphia-based foundations. So we've been kind of step-by-step and quite strategically building our base of support. And as we move towards ultimately starting a quiet phase of a capital campaign, the path will follow a similar trajectory. In other words, it will be individuals at first that will be essential to get the initial commitments to be able to move forward. And then from that, we can build to foundation support both here in the city and hopefully nationally as well.
That's exciting, and you put that so concisely. And to me, that sounds a little bit like the model of a museum. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the initial group of what sound like private supporters, individuals, are almost like a board of trustees or a board of directors. Is that the case? Because you are also a nonprofit, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we are a nonprofit. So we're to use the jargon, we're a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, and therefore we do have a board of trustees. Interestingly, though, our board at the moment is still quite small. It's the minimal size that you need to satisfy the IRS, and our supporters are not board members. That is going to change over the next 6 to 9 months. The institution, as we segue into a capital campaign mode and look to build the building, some of those financial supporters will transition on to becoming board members, and we will grow the board as well. And that's really perhaps when you, any museum director will tell you, probably the single most important thing is what kind of a board you build. And you need a variety of different things. You obviously need financial support. You also need technical expertise. If you're building a building, there's a lot of moving parts there. And so people with experience in building, in fundraising, in legal issues, real estate issues, those are all incredibly important. You also need a board that reflects where you are, and Philadelphia is a very diverse city. It is, by a slight margin, a majority African-American city. But there's a lot of diversity in all directions reflected in Philadelphia, so we want to make sure our board reflects that as well. And you also need a board that can understand and support the artistic mission. So, you know, there's a lot of bars to jump over in terms of putting together the board, and that, I think, is will be our next big challenge. And if we're successful in that, it will go a long way towards assuring our success financially and in terms of fundraising.
Before I ask you the last question, it's exciting, so exciting that you're doing this project and to talk to you about this. Is there anything that you'd like to say about this project or that I missed asking you that you would have liked to say?
I think, you know, the key to this project to me is really trying to help push forward the model for a nonprofit contemporary art space. So it's very hard within an institution once it's up and running to make fundamental course corrections. You know, you kind of set a model and then you go. And that was really what led me to want to start a new organization and to build an organization that is truly designed to accommodate the multidisciplinary nature of contemporary art. I mean, everybody knows that contemporary art is multidisciplinary. That is not news. But most institutions struggle to accommodate that, both in terms of their architecture and in some cases in terms of their staffing and structure. So I wanted to address that issue. I wanted to address the kind of siloed nature of most institutions by trying to build in collaborations as we move along. And I also want to create an institution that does reflect a wider audience than the traditional contemporary art audience, hence the effort to bring in spoken word as one part of that. So I think those are the main issues that are at the heart of Philadelphia Contemporary and that make it exciting for me to want to pursue this.
Well, that's certainly what makes it exciting for me to talk to you about. It's a very exciting venture, and I wish you more success with it. I want to ask you before we go, what are you reading now? The question I ask everyone at the end.
I'm reading a book recommended to me by my wife, by an author named Adam Grant, and it's called The Originals. And it is looking at various different examples of folks that have started new businesses or reinvented businesses within certain industries. So obviously it's right up my alley at the moment.
Harry, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it very much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.